Welcome to the ARC Experience, featuring the stories of self-advocates with disabilities and their families from around Wisconsin. Be inspired. Take action. And now for today's episode.
Hello, and welcome to the ARC Experience podcast. I am your host, Lisa Pugh from the ARC Wisconsin, and I am so excited to have a colleague from the ARC join me today. Stacy Ramirez is joining us all the way from Georgia. She is an incredible national advocate. She has led the ARC Georgia since 2015 and recently is moving on to start her own national consulting firm, Crimmins & Associates. I'm sure she'll tell us more about that. And she is a nationally known trainer. She has significant experience in something called person-centered planning, which she's going to talk to us about today. She has a steadfast belief that every person has gifts and the capacity to exceed the expectations from society. But she would certainly add to her resume, I know this, that she is also mom to three sons, one who has autism. So welcome, Stacy.
Thank you, Lisa. I'm excited to have this conversation with a dear friend.
Well, what did I miss in your bio, Stacy? What else do people need to know about you?
I love what I do.
All righty. Well, let's get into our great conversation today. Stacy, I know we could talk about so many things, but you mentioned person-centered planning, but just backing that up a bit, I've heard you talk about this myth of the good life, or the way that we perceive the good life, and I'm using air quotes, for people with disabilities. What are our biases around a good life for people with disabilities?
Yes, over the years, well, I mean, but we're both moms of a daughter, and then I have my son with autism, and we often see the boxes that either our family members are being put in, or our friends who have disabilities are being put in, just by label of the disability. And what I've found through my study of person-centered planning, and it's actually through a process called person-centered thinking, that I came to understand that there is a spectrum of services. It gave me, I knew they were there, but this gave me a dialogue to help others see that most people start with this bias towards a service life, and that's perceived as a good life because people are safe, they're being given their medicine, and they're protected, and everything that's important for them to live a safe and healthy life is in place. But that's a limiting bias to what people could and should be doing. So if we move from a service life and build onto what you had mentioned, that good life, or some people call it a good paid life. And that's where we began to have these person-centered conversations. And that's all they are. When people say person-centered planning, it's really just talking with someone and listening for the dream, quieting yourself, quieting your own biases of what that person should or could do, and listen to what they want. Listen for the gifts that they bring to the community. So if you move from that service life and keeping people healthy to, which is not a bad thing, by the way, but if you were to add what was important to the person along with that safety and health, then you start to look at a wonderful blossoming person in a community. Because when a person brings their gifts, their capacities with them to the community, they are seen for the gift they are versus the label they've been given. Did that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think what I hear you say is that our limiting belief in that service life might just mean that, for instance, my daughter, her name is Erica, that she might live in a group home. She's going to have, she'll have workers, maybe have help with her meals and getting dressed in the morning and make sure that she has her flu shot. But that would be about it, which is what maybe the bare minimum we should be expecting of somebody's life.
Right. Definitely. So when you move, when you start to listen for what Erica just loves and brings to the community, which we both know is so much, you start to see where she blossoms in her place and adds to the vibrance of the community because of the gift she brings, the gift that she is. That's why I get so passionate about having these conversations around persons in her planning. Is the person, it's like going from black and white, which in itself is not a bad thing, but black and white to full technicolor. The person begins to come to the community in everything that they are.
Everything you're saying makes great sense. I'm listening as a parent, right? And I think a lot of the listeners to our podcast are family members, and you're a family member. Do you think that maybe where parents get stuck is in that whole kind of risk-taking space? I know some people call it dignity of risk. Like, I want my son or daughter to be safe, therefore there are certain things I don't want them ever to try or to do because it might be risky. How can parents kind of address those fears to get toward the real good life?
Right. Well, the thing that, as one mom talking to another mom of a daughter and a son with a disability, I never want to negate or belittle those fears because they're real, right, Lisa? They're very real. So when I go in, like this past weekend, I was having conversations doing person-centered planning with a prominent parent in Georgia who's just done great advocacy work. And my question to her, once I listened for the dreams of her son, was, now how do we keep you safe in this transition? And the tears started to flow because we never really think about ourselves. So all of this to say is, we as parents of a son or daughter with a disability, we have to understand where we're safe when our children begin to take those big steps in the dignity of risk. I'll give an example. I have three boys that I mentioned. My older and my younger do not have a label of a disability. So when they came of age, they just went and did. Half, I didn't know what was going on, where they were going or what they were doing. But with Ryan, my son with autism, his name is Ryan. With Ryan, he's right here beside me, needing and when he was young, needing the supports. As he grew, he didn't get to experience the interdependence or independence that his brothers did because I'm right there with them all the time. So what I had to learn about was who had the control over his life. So I had to move from being in total control to being an advisor in his life. And as I'm doing that, I'm also supporting him to understand to move from being just an advisor in his life to owning the control. When we began to make that shift and he was supporting me to step back because he is a very proud advocate and I'm supporting him to step forward, it diminished some of the fear of that dignity of risk you mentioned. And some of the first steps we took was him riding in Georgia. It's called in Metro Georgia, it's the MARTA system. And that man can take a bus to a train to another bus to go an hours away to a different destination. I can't do it. It's just, he was passionate that he loves public transportation. So I had to let go and just know that if the bus system or the train system in Georgia or Atlanta isn't that massive. So if he goes north when he should have gone south, he can text me and say, I don't know where I am, and I can go north. Go north, young man, go north. The rest of the story, Lisa, just to let you know, is there is this Find Me app, and he always knows where I am. So it's not that just mom is keeping an eye on her son. He can know where I am at any time, and I know where he is at any time, so we can find each other if need be. Those things supported me in establishing dignity of risk for Ryan, meaning giving him the dignity to risk some things in his life that were scary, well, to me, not necessarily to him, but they were scary to him. And it's fine. He, like I said, he's doing well. He teaches me. It's called trip training. Some providers, DD providers, call it trip training. He trip trains me. He tells me how to get from A to B. It's fun. Well, so those are the kind of things. Yeah, go ahead.
You didn't get there overnight, though. I'm sure there was a lot of practice, small steps, training, short trips, first of all. Like, I think that's where parents maybe get stuck, right? They think of the worst possible thing that could happen, and then they just stop, right?
Right. The other thing is, I would be remiss if I didn't mention my mentors. So I had people around me. When you step into the world of person-centered planning and you really step into the world of person-centered conversations, then there are experts that will push you to explore the outer limits of that dignity of risk. So my mentors, Dottie Adams, Scott Crane, Jack Pierpoint, John O'Brien, Connie Lyle O'Brien, Linda Kahn, the list goes on and on of these powerful people that have expertise, one, in person-centered planning, but also have expertise in or experience in sitting alongside people with disabilities, and through facilitating the conversations of person-centered planning, have seen the immense possibilities. And they helped me, therefore, see the immense possibilities and helped me to understand where I was limiting both myself and Ryan by keeping him safe and keeping him in that service system mentality versus that rich community life mentality.
I think parents mentoring other parents, like, there's so much value in that. I totally agree.
Right.
You know, you've mentioned person-centered planning several times, and we said we were going to share more about that, but what is person-centered planning, and kind of how can you, what are some tools and ways to start if you want to kind of work your way out of that box of the service life?
Right. So you want to move on that continuum to the rich community life. Person-centered planning, when people ask me what is person-centered planning, like I said at the very beginning, it's just having facilitated conversations. I'll be more specific on the facilitated conversations, because there are some skills, some tools, some pathways that I mentioned Jack Pierpoint, Linda Kahn, John Akani, Lyle O'Brien. They have created and continue to facilitate helping people understand the conversations of something called a MAPS and a PATH. And it's just a series of conversations. And when you truly understand the process and you trust the process, the beauty that comes out of those conversations is immense. And you have no way but to move on that continuum to the community life. So it's those conversations that listen for the gifts, the dreams, what people can do versus the limits that, going back to what we talked about early, the biases of some people put on people with disabilities. It's thinking way outside the box. And then bringing the other component that's critical, because person-centered planning cannot be an interview. It can't be just, Lisa, you and I have a conversation on person-centered planning, and we're saying that that's we've done planning. I feel it's critical that you bring together a circle of support. And I've explained it one time to somebody, it's like the cuts in a diamond. If the diamond has all these additional perfectly placed cuts, then the diamond will shine in beyond imagine. So when that circle of support comes together, you get all the pieces, all the little places that a person shines. So it's having facilitate conversations with a circle of support that ends with the outcome is the person with a disability is heard. They're the boss. Anything that goes on the plan has been approved by them, whether they use formal language to communicate or not. We didn't even go there. And that there's ongoing conversations about how we're going to make these plans that have been put together a reality.
So do I need some expert to come in and do this for me? Or if I'm a parent and I'm listening and I need to get started, I want to get started, but I don't know where to start. Are there some simple tools I can use or more information? Can I give them to my team and think about how we can do some of this together?
Right. Well, we've talked about you're in Wisconsin, I'm in Georgia. I would love to come to Wisconsin and help out to build this thing called a facilitators forum that have been popping up around the country. But in the meantime, there's some resources where people can go to find out more. One of them is actually from the Administration on Community Living. This is a federal organization, a federal agency that has a website on person-centered planning. And just it's acl.gov. I can give you that website if you wanted me to.
We can make sure we put it in the show notes, and any other tools that you talked about today, mm-hmm. I think you can look in the show notes as well as contact information
right.
for Stacy. So I think I hear you saying you can educate yourself and there are tools available, and it's just really important to kind of open up your idea of what's possible first, right?
Right. Yes, definitely, Lisa. The other part that I'm seeing many parents bump into is they're so wanting their son or daughter to have a plan, but it's not right at that time for their son or daughter. So just, we can never forget who's in the driver's seat, and support your son or daughter, the person with the disability, the focus person, to come along the process with you, that the plan, we could spend hours coming up with the perfect plan, but if the focus person, if they're not wanting and they're not ready to have those conversations, it's not the right time. So be respectful of timing, and is it the right time for your son or daughter?
Good, really good advice. As we're ending our time together, I'm wondering, what are really some parting thoughts you have for people who might be listening? They're really, you know, excited by what they're hearing. If you wanted to leave us with some words of wisdom, what would it be?
Wow. Words of wisdom would be to quiet. When you're having conversations with people especially nowadays, these days, with people, start to practice listening for what's not being said. That's a lot of what person-centered planning, person-centered facilitators are doing. They're listening for what's under the initial conversation. And that just means listening for what's true to the person and what you're feeling, what you're identifying as most important to the person. Words of wisdom would be to listen with empathy, listen with understanding. And not always be so quick to rush in and fix, but sometimes it's better just to let things be for a little while and watch them blossom. That is one of the beauties, one of the gifts that person-centered planning has given to me as a recovering fixer is just to be with people.
I love this conversation. I love everything you shared about person-centered planning and dignity of risk. A lot of really great advice for all of us. So thank you so much for joining us, Stacy.
It was my honor, Lisa.
Well, my goal is to have Stacy come to Wisconsin, so stay tuned. Thank you to all of our listeners of the ARC Experience podcast today. And always remember to like, share, and subscribe. Until next time.
Today's episode of the ARC Experience was brought to you by the ARC Wisconsin, the state's oldest advocacy organization for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. It's funded in part by the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Our theme music, called Species,
today's
is the property
of the ARC
EY5Z
and
brought to you
and
by
cannot
the
be
ARC
copied
Wisconsin,
or distributed
the state's
without
oldest
permission.
Advocacy organization.
It was produced
for
by Eleanor Cheatham,
intellectual,
a
composer and artist
with autism
and their families. It's funded in part by the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Our theme music, called Species, is the property of EY5Z and cannot be copied or distributed without permission. It was produced by Eleanor Cheatham, a composer and artist with autism.